This is the Fantasy Focus Books and Authors Podcast, episode 12. Well, good day and welcome to this episode of the Fantasy Focus Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is. It's a show focused on everything in fantasy books, from epic fantasy to urban fantasy to swords and sorcery and everything in between. You can expect to find the best and brightest authors from all the various corners of the fantasy book world here on the show. Plus, we'll add in a few special other guests along the way. Now, I spent the earlier part of this week looking at wedding venues with my wife, daughter, and her fiancé. Even with the trip to the shore, though, I was able to get some stuff done. I still managed to find time to review the audiobook files for the upcoming Cyber's Change audiobook. The ebook, paperback, and audiobook will all be released together early next month, and I'm really excited. Sarah Guys, the narrator, did just an awesome job on the project. And so if you want to check that out, you'll find the ebook on pre-order sales online. It's 99 cents if you're interested in picking it up at a discounted price. That's just for the pre-order time period. It'll go up as soon as it's released. Also, if you're interested in some more information on what I'm up to in general, check out my fan group over on Facebook. It's Jamie's Fun Fantasy Superfans, and also on my website and blog, jamiedavisbooks.com. I look forward to hearing from you, so check it out over there and feel free to drop me a line if you want. Let's go ahead and get into our special guest for this episode. Today, we have L.E. Modesitt Jr. You probably know that name very well. He's the best-selling author of over 70 novels encompassing two science fiction series and four fantasy series, as well as several other novels in the science fiction genre. He's worked a host of jobs over the course of his life, including delivery boy, lifeguard, an unpaid radio disc jockey, a U.S. Navy pilot, a market research analyst, real estate agent, federal government employee, and a college lecturer and writer in residence. In addition to all his novels and other activities, Mr. Modesitt has published technical studies, articles, columns, poetry, and a number of science fiction short stories. His very first short story was published in 1973. So I'm really excited about this one. Here's my interview with Lee. Lee, I just want to welcome you to the Fantasy Focus podcast. It's quite an honor to have you on the show.
I'm really glad to be on it, and I don't know about the honor bit, but I'm going to enjoy it, I think.
Well, I've been reading your books. I think I read Magic of Recluse probably right after it came out, and I love that entire series. I have so many questions for you just to kind of see what you thought about in world building and things like that from that perspective. But I've really enjoyed your work, and you're quite a prolific author with a lot of books out there. So there's going to be quite a bit for us to chat about tonight.
Well, you ask the questions and I'll do my best.
Excellent. So let's start off with kind of talking to folks a little bit about if you want. I know probably everybody or most people know who you are, but there might be a few who don't. So why don't you introduce yourself and tell them a little bit about why writing is the thing you do? What got you into writing?
I never thought I was ever going to be a science fiction writer. I read it since I was a kid, but I started out as a classically trained poet. I didn't even write my first science fiction story until I was 29 years old. And at that time, I didn't even think about writing a novel. And I'll make this short because some people know the answer to it. But after struggling through about 100 stories in my very late 20s and 30s, and having sold about six of them, I finally got a rejection letter from Ben Bova, who'd bought several of those stories, which basically said, "You're really not a short story writer. You really ought to go write a novel. And furthermore, I won't buy another story from you until you do." And that's literally what pushed me into writing novels. Now that was, Lord, that was over 40 years ago. And I wrote part-time while working in Washington, D.C. and other places for almost 20 years before I could get to a point where I could support myself financially and a family, of course. And I could finally leave the Washington, D.C. rat race. And I've basically been a full-time writer since 1993. And right now, we're talking about I have published or have scheduled to publish something like 76 books.
It's amazing. I was looking at your catalog, and there's more books out there that I didn't even realize were out there. I think, you know, it's hard to keep track sometimes of what writers are putting out from time to time. And I was astounded that I'd found all these series I hadn't even known you'd written. So, and we're actually going to be talking about one of them tonight, which I'm excited about, the End Games book that's coming out soon from the Imager.
Yeah.
The Imager series.
It actually came out 2 weeks ago. But
did it? Okay. No, you're right. It did. Awesome. I apologize for that. And actually the whole concept, one of the things I liked about the Magic Recluse and that whole series was just the in-depth world building that you do. And it looks like you're doing the same thing here, with End Games. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, the Imager portfolio, the overall series, and kind of what is the underlying theme, and story about in this world? Because I know that you jump back in time and do a lot of things. So End Games is actually a separate segment of the whole overall series. But the magic in the world is based upon people basically seeing and making something happen.
Actually, not so much that. It's based on a certain number of people who have the genetic trait of being able to imagine things into being, which sounds like a really nifty idea. But there's a small problem with it. It takes your physical energy. And if you're not trained, the odds of you're making it to adulthood are about zero. As a consequence, in one land, the structure is set up so that there is actually a collegium imago, which raises imagers and trains them. Now, there are 12 books in the series. The first three books take place in what you might call the present. The next five take place 700 years before that, and the last four take place in the middle. And End Games is the last of those four middle books. But they actually form a cycle or a circle so that the history that Ren, who is the protagonist of the first three books, occasionally mentions, is completed in End Games. And I don't want to give spoilers on it. But
no,
that's,
I know. I'm sure you don't. But I'm fascinated because you kind of did something at least similar with time hopping in the storyline with Recluse as well. Is that just something that appeals to you, where you write a story and then you want to go back and write the backstory to some of the things you mentioned in your original story?
I think it's more, you might call it, I wouldn't say a foible, it's just the way my mind works. My wife has said that you think strange. And I have always been a great buff of history. I still read archaeology magazines, but I also like high tech. And when I write something, I've always got the backstory somewhat in mind, because I don't think the world is really real. And I think readers can tell it if it doesn't have a history. You may not want to do a lot of history if you're only doing one book. But if you're doing a series, you really need to have a history and a culture and a background. I've read books by other authors, well-written books, but I've often had the thought of, okay, this society works, but I can't figure out any way it could ever have come to exist. People just wouldn't do the things that would create this society. So when I've been writing these series, these various series, the question to me is not just how it works, but it's also not just that, but it's also the idea of how did we get here? What are the background? What are the myths? What's the history? What are the cultural presences?
Yeah, there has to, you're right. And I think that that makes a lot of sense from a reader standpoint, because you kind of get that sense of purpose and understanding of the underlying why something might be happening. And I think that you're right that it may be not something they even are conscious of. It's just, maybe it just seems a little thin in places. Does that make sense?
I would say so. But then again, I'm probably a little bit more critical on that because that's something I look for. And it all depends on what kind of a reader a given person is, because there are a lot of people who just want nonstop action, and there's nothing wrong with that, but they really shouldn't be looking at my books if that's the kind of reader they are, because I go into a little bit more depth and they're probably a little bit slower.
Well, and I think that's fair. I think we, I try to think of, you know, who am I writing to? And I think that comes back to I was a podcaster long before I started writing. And I always tried to think about who I was talking to when I'd sit in alone and do my podcast solo. I always tried to think of that perfect listener. And when I started writing the same way. Who's this person listening to me? What do they like? What are they looking for in a story? And those were the kind of stories I tried to write, usually because I was part that listener too, because I was writing for myself, but also trying to understand what it is that I like and why. So,
well, I think you've raised a good point there. And that is, if you aren't as a writer, I believe this at least, if you aren't as a writer writing for yourself, I don't think it's as rich. I guess there are people who can write to a market, but I've always been wary of that. I've sort of felt like, well, personally, I don't lie very well. And I guess as a writer, I don't want to even try to.
No, and that makes sense. And I think for some people, I think writing, the whole writing to market thing that goes on in writing now is, I think, misunderstood by some people and misused by others. Because I think there's such a thing as saying, I really like this genre and I want to write in it because I understand it. And these are the types of stories I like. And so in that sense, you're writing for that market because those are the types of stories that interest you. But then there are other, then there's those people that say, this market sells well, I'm going to write for that market, even though those aren't the types of stories I enjoy. And I think that sometimes more often than not, it shows.
At least to me, it shows. But there may be some authors who are skilled enough at it that it doesn't show. I wouldn't be one of them.
No, and I think that I feel the same way. I write what I like, and I tend to. My mind is such that I don't like to just follow the rules all the time. I want to write what makes sense to me, and so I don't stay within the lines as much as some people would say that I should, quote unquote, should. But I like what I do, and people seem to like the stories I'm writing, so I'm going to keep doing it.
Well, I think you should.
So tell me a little bit about, all these stories that you've come up with. Are there things that spur the ideas for you? Do you just constantly have like the next idea or next 10 ideas kind of in the back of your mind that are kind of rolling around and this is what you're going to start on next? Or were all these 70 books each one kind of worked out of the last one in some way? Sorry.
I guess I'd have to say sort of all of the above and none of the above.
Okay.
And by that, I mean, I wrote the first Recluse book, The Magic of Recluse, as literally a challenge. And I've told the story so often, I'm not going to go into it. But the idea was I'd written technical, hard science fiction, very hard science fiction for almost 20 years. And I was not happy with a lot of the fantasy that was being published at that time. And I just thought, I'd like to do something in this that is fantasy, that has workable economics, workable technology, and a cohesive social structure and economic system that's not based on folk tales, medieval ripoffs, or everybody else's history. And that was literally the genesis of Recluse.
No, and it's, well, it's, and it's the whole concept of Recluse is interesting. And you do that full circle thing again, sort of, because you go back and you show how everything kind of got started in this different universe or this different world when people got transported there, I guess, from another place.
Yeah. Actually, two groups got transported there, but, yeah. And the thing about it, the thing about Recluse is that it's, the book spans some 2,000 years, and it's a dynamic history. I mean, you start in the beginning with the growth and then the formation of the great empire of Sayador, but it doesn't last, and pretty much nothing lasts. We see over that period of time, countries rise, countries fall. There are occasional revolutions, not many, because revolutions usually aren't successful, but there are a couple. And you see people move, countries change. It's literally a dynamic history, and the world is very different at the end of those 2,000 years than the one you started with.
And, you know, and it's interesting, because when I look at history and I look at the longest lived countries or country states, they don't last that long in the scheme of things. When you look at the whole of history, which makes us wonder, you know, here we are 200 some years into the United States, this experiment we call a democracy or a republic and the United States of America. When is the end of that? And I'm not wishing it on us, but historically speaking, things don't last forever.
No, one of the things that I do notice in history, though, is generally speaking, it appears to be that the higher the technology employed, the shorter the empires last, so to speak. I mean, you go back to ancient Egypt, and you had, yes, there were dynasties that rose and fell, but you had the same forms of government for a long time. The Roman Empire probably lasted 400 years. Depends on all how all you count it. People think of China as monolithic, but it really wasn't. There were a series of empires there. But nothing was really all, as you point out, that long. But it seems like things are getting a little shorter with high technology.
Well, things are changing so quickly. People... think about the advent of, you know, different types of reading that people do between ebooks and audiobooks and the way we consume that media now. So much is different just over the last 5 years, not even go back 10 years. Let's just go back 5 years, how much has changed. And it makes me wonder, you know, with being in this business, how I can even begin to predict what will happen 5 years from now, because so many things change so quickly nowadays.
Well, some things change and some things don't change. Some are the illusion of change. I mean, we've pretty much reached a stage right now where we have, at least on this planet, instantaneous communications. We can't communicate any faster. Computers maybe can, but we can't. We can't process it any faster. Likewise, okay, you can get pretty much anywhere in the world in 15 to 16 hours. That's 15 or 16 hours, and it seems long, but it's a huge change from the time when it took weeks to get across the ocean. But it's not going to happen that much faster from here on in. So in a lot of ways, our technology is reaching, in certain areas, physical limits. And the illusion of change, because basically if we're talking about books and reading, the reading process for the human is still pretty much the same. The way it's consumed has changed, but there's a limit on how fast people can read. That's an individual limit usually, but even physically, there's got to be a top limit on how fast you can process things. So it's going to be interesting to see how this collision of the expectation of change with the reality that some things aren't going to be able to change is going to turn out.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to put that. And you're right. Even with audiobooks playing at like double speed, so you can listen to a book faster, it still is a finite limit on how quickly that can be consumed by the human brain. And unless you get to a point where you can actually physically upload a book to your brain and know it instantly, there's really nothing in between there.
Somehow, I don't think your brain is going to know it instantly, even if it's there. I think you're going to have to process it, even if it's the contents are in your mind. I think it's just a different form of putting it there.
Well, and because storytelling is so integral to the human condition, I like to think that there have been storytellers as long as there's been a campfire to sit around. You know, what did you do on the hunt today? Well, this is what happened. and we've progressed from telling those stories to enriching those stories and building worlds around those stories and entertaining people with those stories. So I think you're probably right there, because there's a certain narrative function of a story that you wouldn't get if you just uploaded it.
Well, I think one of the things that science fiction and fantasy offer is a way of looking at reality, which is somewhat divorced from people's preconceptions and prejudices. I've said this before, but you probably haven't heard it. I have the unenviable distinction of having both a lot of bestsellers from Tor and one of the worst-selling books Tor ever published. I did a near-future murder mystery thriller with Bruce Levinson some 25 years ago, and it got good reviews, and people hated it. And I think one of the reasons why people didn't like it was, one of the reviews said it was one of the best written descriptions of American politics at that time. People didn't want to know. But you can take those issues in science fiction and fantasy and put them in an, quote, unreal world, and people will look at them and think, I wonder how that would work. They won't even touch it if it's too close to our world. And I think that's one of the things that science fiction and fantasy, it's one of the great advantages of the field. It's one of the things I enjoy most about it.
Well, you get to explore those different systems and different conventions of society in a lot of different ways and say, I wonder if this, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So what do you have coming up next? I mean, Endgames just came out on February 5th. Is there another project on the horizon you can talk about?
Oh, yeah. Actually, there are several that are already done. The next Recluse book, which is the sequel to Outcasts of Order, that next book is called The Mage Fire War, and that will be out on August 19th from Tor. Pretty much everything for the last 25, 30 years has been from Tor for me. And then I have a far future high-tech science fantasy called Quantum Shadows, or 45 Ways of Looking at a Raven, which will be out in July of 2020.
That sounds fascinating. Can you give us a hint of what that's about?
I will only give you a little bit more of a hint. The original title was Quantum Shadows of Heaven.
Okay.
And the marketing people didn't like that many words, so it's now Quantum Shadows. And then I'm in the last stages of finishing up a follow-on in the Recluse universe called Fairhaven Rising. And that takes place some 16 years after the Mage Fire War. And since I'm in those last stages and I only work at one book at a time, I can't tell you what comes after that.
Understood. Understood. Well, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people very excited to hear that you have some new things coming out and soon. And of course, Endgames is already out. And this is the end of the Imgur portfolio, correct?
Yeah, it is the end of the Imgur portfolio. Unlike Recluse or even the Corian Chronicles, although I haven't written more on that anytime recently, Endgames just felt like a closed cycle. And I really thought that anything else I wrote in that particular time frame in that world would be almost an anticlimax for the readers, and I didn't want to do that. I talked it over a lot with my editor and a lot of other people, and I feel that this is one that just ought to be left where it is.
Anything you'd like to share with the readers that you might run into at upcoming convention or something like that? I know a lot of readers sometimes are a little frightened to approach a writer that they've read, and maybe you could say something about what it's like for you on your side meeting people.
I enjoy conventions. I enjoy meeting people. For reasons that I'm not going to go into here, I'm not going to be making quite as many appearances this year. There are some family health issues, not mine, but some family health issues which are going to slow me down this year. But I will be doing World Fantasy in Los Angeles, and I might be doing, and I don't know this yet, I might be doing a Comic-Con or two later in the year. But I enjoy meeting people. I enjoy talking about the field. I'm usually the guy with the brightest vest and a matching tie that goes with that vest, and usually black slacks. And I'm pretty approachable. I'll talk to you.
Well, I think that's great, because I know that, you know, I was so excited when I found out that you were scheduled to come on the show, Lee, and it's been an honor chatting with you and just kind of picking your brain a little bit about your thoughts about the field of writing and things like that. So thanks so much for coming on. I'll make sure we share links to Endgames and some of the other things we talked about as well. And everybody can find you at lemodessitjr.com. So we'll have links to that as well. But thanks for taking some time and coming on the Fantasy Focus podcast.
Well, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Fantasy Focus Books and Authors podcast. Make sure you check up and catch up with us online for a whole lot more from the Fantasy Focus community. You can find that community in the group over on Facebook and also over at fantasy-focus.com. Leave a comment on this episode there and let me know what's on your mind. Also, on the website and on each podcast episode post, you'll find links on how to subscribe to the show so you can get it delivered every time a new episode comes out via your favorite mobile app for iOS, Android, and also apps like Stitcher and TuneIn. You can even sign up to be subscribed by email. But make sure you do that. Head over. You don't want to miss any of these episodes. We've got some great stuff coming up. We have some pretty awesome authors already scheduled in the next few months, including next week's episode with Alan Batchelder. Check it out when that comes out soon. That's it for this episode of the Fantasy Focus podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook at Jamie Davis Books and at my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where you can get a free book just by going over and signing up for the newsletter. You'll see that in the sidebar there. Whatever you do, though, subscribe and come back here for the next podcast. In the meantime, I'll just remind you, as I always do, to keep your eyes open, folks, because there's magic all around you.